The United States have not formally imposed economic or military sanctions on Equatorial Guinea, but America's policies of restricted military aid and sales, and its constant harping on human rights and elections, amounted to crypto-sanctions, as Smith called them in his private arguments with state colleagues. These constraints limited American influence in Malabo, and threatened to drive Obiang into alliance with China, France, India, and other less squeamish oil-importing nations. This was the case even though the country produced 450,000 barrels of oil per day, and American oil companies, including ExxonMobil, had invested about $13 billion that would be at risk if Obiang fell from power or stopped trying to curry favor in Washington. During 2008, Smith struggled to persuade his superiors in Washington of his viewpoints. In May, Equatorial Guinea staged parliamentary elections in which Obiang's ruling party won 99 out of 100 seats. International observers raised doubts about the credibility of the polls, particularly given that the country's opposition leaders had been harassed, jailed, and forced into exile for years. Smith believed, citing his first-hand observations, that the vote itself should be certified as free and fair. He failed to persuade Washington. Then, in November, Manfred Novak, the United Nations Special Rapporteur on Torture, visited Equatorial Guinea on an invitation from the government. Obiang's willingness to issue such an invitation struck Smith as a sign of progress. Novak, however, inspected police stations and prisons, found evidence of recent abuses, and declared publicly that the country continued to use torture systematically against prisoners who refused to make coerced confessions. "Torture is rife in Equatorial Guinea's prisons," was the headline on a UN news release about Novak's inspection. Smith criticized Novak as a grandstander with preconceived ideas and argued that Obiang should be given some credit for openness. Not long afterward, Obiang was re-elected to yet another term as president with 95% of the votes cast. Smith's superiors at Foggy Bottom reprimanded him during his annual review for failing to take policy direction from Washington. Smith decided that Barack Obama's inauguration and the changes of political appointees that accompany any new administration offered an opportunity to lay down fresh, reasoned arguments to re-examine American policy toward Equatorial Guinea. On February 27, 2009, he filed the first in a series of six analytical cables to Washington. Smith's series offered a comprehensive review of Equatorial Guinea's relations with the former African colonial powers of France and Spain, its recent business deals with oil-thirsty China, its internal clan politics, its struggles with corruption and government capacity, its security challenges, and the policy choices facing the Obama administration. Smith marked the cables sensitive but unclassified. As a practical matter, there was little choice but to send diplomatic transmissions from Malabo through unclassified channels, as the embassy lacked cryptographic equipment. "Are we out or in?" the chargé d'affaires asked in his first filing. Since at least Forsyth's The Dogs of War, EG has been a favorite takeover target for both outside and inside plotters, he wrote. President Obiang came to power himself in a coup likely assisted from the outside. He and his team know how it works. Though without official declaration, the country persistently operates under martial law-like conditions. This posture generates human rights concerns as documents are checked, guns are displayed, and foreigners get the fisheye. Still, Smith concluded, American policymakers would be better off if they recognized that Equatorial Guinea is less a rogue state than it is a rudimentary one. He argued, too, that American economic and energy interests required a new approach. Under pressure from U.S. oil companies, he wrote, Embassy Malabo was reborn in late 2003. Nonetheless, our current state might still be better described as half-born than fully hatched. The internal ambivalence of the State Department, the specter of a reluctant Capitol Hill, and associated repugnant human rights NGOs, and the argument of scarce resources has kept Embassy Malabo on a drip feed in these early years. He continued, Despite open doors, EG's nasty reputation is sustained and our ability to address problems constrained. We are behind the curve. Unfortunately, while American oil companies are paying the bills, note, U.S. operators Marathon, Hess, and ExxonMobil are responsible for almost all current production and most of EG government revenues, it is still more often the Chinese, the French, or the Egyptians who get credit for assisting the country's development by undertaking high-profile projects. Our official allergy to EG apparently acts as an appetite suppressant to most private U.S. companies that might otherwise be interested. There are good guys and bad guys here, Smith wrote. We need to strengthen the good guys, for all his faults, President Ouviang among them. We need to get serious about engagement, Smith wrote. It's time to commit. It's time to abandon a moral narrative that has left us with a retrospective bias and ambivalent approach to one of the most promising success stories in the region. What do we want for Equatorial Guinea? Do we want to see the country continue to evolve in positive ways from the very primitive state in which it found itself after independence? Or would we prefer a revolution that brings sudden, uncertain change and unpredictability? The latter has potentially dire consequences for our interests, most notably our energy security.